All right, jerk-offs, we're back post-Christmas. I hope you had a Merry Christmas, or if you're not of the Christmas celebrating persuasion, you just had a happy holidays, took some time off, enjoyed yourself, whatever you enjoyed doing. Sorry this episode is a little bit late, but it is an absolute cracker. We have our first Kiwi on the podcast. That's right, Kiwi, the friendly Australians, the New Zealanders, the Australians that nobody dislikes. I know that's probably going to get me a lot of hate because they are definitely a different country and proud to be so. But hey, I know in the UK you enjoy lumping us in together as the Antipodes, a word that nobody has ever said outside of this country. I want to dive straight into this episode because it is great. It's a little bit of a longer one, but trust me, Jared is a super interesting dude and a super great hang, so you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get into it, I just want to let you know that if you're a fan of my comedy, or if you've ever wanted to check anything out, I've got a special coming out. You know that thing that every comedian in the world is doing right now, releasing a special? Yeah, well, I recorded mine before Netflix decided to release 20 comedy specials every day. But it is coming out January 8th, the special, and January 11th for the album. You can pre-order it on iTunes, either of those. You can pre-order on iTunes, and the album is available on Google Play and Amazon as well. And the special is on iTunes everywhere in the world except for Australia. Apparently, Australian iTunes is a real nightmare for some reason. I don't know. This is the production company telling me this. That company is Comedy Dynamics, by the way. They put out my first album, Let Me Finish, as well. They're an American company. They put out a bunch of great stand-up all the time. So if you ever want to listen to some stand-up comedy, go through their back catalog. There is plenty there. But yeah, so my special, if you want to order it anywhere around the world, it is iTunes. And if you want to order it in Australia, it is on Vimeo. And also in Australia only, you will be able to stream it on Amazon Prime immediately. For other countries, you're going to have to wait a few months for that. But in Australia, it's on Amazon Prime. The special is called Let's Never Hang Out. Daniel Muggleton, Let's Never Hang Out. Please pre-order it. Tweet about it. Tell a friend. Any of that stuff. I would really appreciate it. Because it's my first special, and it would be nice if I get some eyeballs on it. Beyond that, thank you so much for listening. It's about to be the end of the year. Don't worry, this thing is going to keep going. The Union Jack-Off will continue and grow, and I've got some great guests lined up for you in the new year. But as always, if you want to get in touch, I'm at Dan Muggleton on Twitter and Instagram. You can get us on Facebook, The Union Jack-Off with Daniel Muggleton. And if you want to email, some people prefer email, keep it profesh, you can get me at muggletondaniel@gmail.com. All right, it's a long episode. It's a great episode. I want to dive in. Jerk-offs, get excited. Here is New Zealand's Jared Christmas, just after Christmas. Let me just go, see? On a sip.
Sip as well.
On a sip to start with your beautiful
hipster. It's a good ginger beer, mate.
I wanted it to be like as hipster as possible. Like I went to one of those, you know, those supermarkets where like they keep the fruit outside, not because that's the only place they can store it, but because like lends it an authenticity.
Yeah, totally. It's all about being authentic and you know, we're really original, and you're like, well, you're not, because now there's 20 hipster joints exactly like you.
Exactly. And like, yeah, because, you know, like the bowls here, you know, it's just like the bowl of fruit, like a bowl of a pound.
Yeah.
And then the hipster joints, it's just like a basket and there's like multiple things. And it's it is £3 per item.
Yeah.
We're not doing this as a means of knowing what to buy. This is purely to draw you in.
There's
like,
oh, image.
Is that a shallot?
Yeah.
And then you go like across the street and you buy them. I learned what shallots were the other day.
Oh, tiny onions, aren't they?
Squashed onions. They're kind of like onions. They're kind of like, yeah, if you sat on an onion and you weren't that heavy, shallot.
Perfect. I learned about shallots very early on because my dad used to do a joke of saying, thanks, shallot. And, you know, that was just a pun that happened a lot, and I didn't really know what a shallot was.
So then you researched it in order
I did a bit of research.
In order to locate the pun.
Yeah, if he's going to do the jokes, I better do the research.
Nice. Right? Yeah. That's like reverse QI. Yeah. Is that reverse QI?
Yeah, man.
What order? I don't know what order QI happens in.
I don't know. Sometimes I watch QI going, what's wrong with that answer? When it gets a
yeah. Well, that's the show. It's like, hey, smarty pants. You know how you'd usually be right?
Yeah.
Well, when Stephen Fry is there, you're now wrong.
Yeah, your brain is tiny.
And British people fucking love that. I don't know why.
It's superiority, mate.
Yeah.
I love it.
But they're impressed by puns, though. This is my is my great lament of British people.
Yeah.
They're impressed.
They love a pun.
Dude, like, it gets a round of applause.
And my issue with puns is, comedically, I've always wanted to perform all over the world.
Yeah.
So if I work really hard on a pun,
yeah,
it's not necessarily going to work in Europe, where English is a second language.
Right, it doesn't translate in the same way like a joke about or a story.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, a story is a story.
Yeah, no matter where you are.
We stole all our stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to steal them from the Greeks. Now we steal them from the Japanese.
Yeah.
I don't know.
As long as we put them in a museum, it's fine.
As long as you put bloody... Oh, what's his name? I can't remember. The Kill Bill guy. Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all Japanese rip-offs, baby.
It is, isn't it? Kill Bill.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
Not only ripping off Japan, set in Japan.
Yeah, he's so open about it, though.
Yeah. I was inspired by the Japanese.
I kind of love it. You know, everything draws back to him working in a... in a blockbuster video or something, you know?
Yeah. That was his thing. He's like, I didn't go to movie school. I went to the movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can only say that after three really good films, you know? Yeah. Like, that's only justified by the body of work.
Yeah,
otherwise,
that's
just like a cunt thing to say.
Yeah, totally. I rip shit off.
Yeah.
You know, any other industry, we'd be like, yeah, we can see you ripping shit off. I guess, you know, creatively... As long as it's not word for word, you know, he's inspired by. It's like those movies that always start with inspired by a true story. Mm. And you're like, yeah, but the true story could have been there was a guy called Tom, and that's the true story, and now there's aliens involved, you know?
I mean, did they do that to, like, lend the plot authenticity, you think?
No idea.
Is that the reason where it's I know this seems unbelievable,
but yeah,
you're going to believe it.
I couldn't give two shits about it. Really? I mean, you know, when you watch a movie like, what was that Mark Wahlberg one, Deepwater Horizon and stuff, you know that's based on a true story.
Because that's so how they don't market it. They're like, the amazing true story.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But now it's got better abs.
Yeah, I know, but when it says inspired by or based on, it's like, this is not helping me invest more in the film, all right? I've already committed to watching the bloody thing.
Yeah,
I watched a film yesterday that straight away I was like, I'm not on board. Aquaman. Oh, man. Look,
it looks like a piece of shit. Like, you just see the post.
I just didn't... This is going to sound ridiculous, but I just didn't buy it.
I did not
buy massive underwater cities. I didn't buy, you know, people living underwater and doing amazing things underwater, yet there's no resistance.
Right.
From that water. They're still fighting at normal speed.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're still talking like...
This is like one of the oldest myths ever. Like, you're not buying into people like Atlantis. That's like one of the first conspiracy theories.
Yeah,
this ain't like, you know, 9/11. This is like the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a fucking city down there.
Well, like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I believe that, you know, this city absolutely got flooded. But don't tell me that they've been secretly becoming this super advanced culture.
But that was the plot of Black Panther.
I buy Black Panther.
What, because it's like set on land? Like,
yes!
That's your one,
yes, it is.
Your one point of view.
And you know why? Because they've got limitations.
Right.
Aquaman, at one point, Aquaman and, you know, his friend from the sea, they go on a plane over the Sahara Desert. They jump out of the plane without parachutes, and then they land and they're absolutely fine. They're now as far away from their suitable environment as possible. They're in a desert. These are water people. Yet they don't get thirsty. They don't get tired at any point. They don't get dehydrated. There's no sign of weakness that you're at the most extreme away. You've grown up in the ocean and now you're in a desert. You telling me that you're going to be absolutely fine here? No. And don't tell me growing up in the sea means you can jump from a plane and hit the ground and be absolutely fine. I call bullshit, mate.
I mean,
at least Black Panther had weaknesses.
You know, this isn't like a film podcast.
Oh no, sorry, mate. Sorry, you can cut all of that out.
I'm I just enjoyed like how heavy you went on it. It's like let me explain the fault of the internal logic of this superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get in there. I mean,
I think it's because the older I've got,
sure,
the more cynical on those. I mean, when I was a kid, I was desperate for those films.
Right.
You know, if I was a kid, Aquaman came out. I would have lost my mind.
Well, Spider-Man, everybody was just like, wait, it's happening? This is exciting.
Yeah, totally. And then, those first Spider-Man movies, I was like, this is incredible. I've wanted this my entire life.
Yeah, I finally get to see it. I played the video games, I watched the cartoons. Yeah. I was happy with the 2D Spider-Man. Yeah.
I was happy with the cartoons that, on hindsight, were shit.
I refuse to go back.
Yeah. Don't go back to Ninja Turtles, mate.
No, of course not.
I love the Ninja Turtles.
But I never got into it. I was always like, what a weird...
Wait, how old are you?
I'm 29.
I got 10 years on you, mate.
So back like a decade before, like, because I grew up with the internet.
Yeah.
So as soon as you have access to the internet at like age 8, you're like, turtles, get the fuck out of here.
Get out. Yeah, I'm watching porn.
Yeah, at age 8. Porn.
I used to run home from school.
Really?
Yeah, I used to run home from school because at 3:30, Ghostbusters was on, cartoon Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters cartoon was all right. Yeah. I rated that, yeah.
Followed by Ninja Turtles.
Right. And that was your double.
And that was my double. And Saturday mornings was Thundercats and Transformers.
Did you have pre-school cartoons as well? As in like before school?
Yeah, I can't really remember them.
Oh, no, but just like, I just remember you said you had to race home.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, it was getting up early. You got up early to watch it before school.
Yeah, we had...
In Australia.
Yeah, but I can't remember there being anything I desperately wanted to get up early to watch.
Well, see, we had Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z.
Wow.
I was like that gen.
Solid.
That was huge. That was when we just started putting the Japanese thing in, but English dub.
Yeah.
That's it. We're like, these guys are great. They get it.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino was right. We need to watch this Japanese shit.
See, the difference between, I guess, that decade and the decade earlier was they would look at a Japanese cartoon and go, that's amazing. We're going to make our own version of it.
Right.
Whereas 10 years later, they looked at a Japanese cartoon and said, let's just dub over it instead of trying to remake this.
Well,
because Transformers is all from,
of course,
original Japanese cartoon.
But like I find the weird thing with the Japanese ones, I only kind of know this as an adult now, is that they had to get out all the swearing and the blood.
Yeah.
Because like in Japan, they're like, yeah, we want that shit, of course. Yeah, of course. Let's get some gritty realism.
Chop an arm off.
Yeah. And just like blood like squirting and shit. Whereas, you know, in the English versions, just be like nothing.
Yeah.
Just like slice the arm off and they just be like, kind of like a steak. Like no dripping or anything, just a steak on the end of the arm. And you're like, well, that would have hurt. Yeah.
But that was the genius, I think, of Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Is that everything was lasers and lightsabers. So all wounds are cauterized? Cauterized. So there's no blood, yet there can be a lot of violence.
Yeah, that's smart. Because it gets PG.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants that PG.
Although... I'm saying that, but in the cantina scene when he chops that, when Obi-Wan chops creature's arm off, isn't there, it's a bloody sort of thing.
I think, it's a kind of like a little bit, like again, kind of like a steak, like, you know, it's just like a little bit of blood like there.
But again, it shouldn't be like that because the lightsaber would,
I mean,
cauterize? Why can't I get that word in my head, mate? Anyway.
You're kind of like, you cauterize the arm. It just makes it into an even four-piece of an arm.
Welcome to the half-assed, non-researched film podcast, everybody.
It's called,
I hope you like it.
It's called Men with Opinions They Can't Justify.
Yeah, I've got nothing to back this up with.
But why'd you go see Aquaman if you weren't keen? Was it a bit of New Zealand solidarity with your boy? Because Jason Momoa, is he?
No, he's not Kiwi, but Temuera Morrison's in it.
But he did a bloody haka.
Yeah, well, the haka is, there's a lot of Pacific Island nations that have hakas as well.
Oh, but
we just made it famous.
But I thought like the other
one. I don't think they call it a haka.
Yeah,
either.
I thought they had different names.
You know, in Samoa, it's not called a haka. I can't remember what it's called.
Mm.
But they are, you know, sort of war challenges.
Yeah. No, because I remember there's like the different ones. Because at the Rugby World Cup, you see everybody do the different.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Tonga's got an amazing one. Samoa's got an amazing one.
So I just thought he was a Kiwi because on the internet he's like, he's doing a haka for the Aquaman launch. And I'm like, I mean, I think we're getting a bit loose with these hakas. Like, because there was the guy won the medal in the Australian Rugby League.
Yeah.
And they did a haka.
Oh, brilliant.
Like, he's like mates in the crowd did a haka to him with holding the medal.
The haka affects me. Like, if I see a haka, an incredible hacker. It's, you know, goosebumps. I get really emotional. But I think there's a huge difference between someone doing a haka at their brother's funeral and a drunk white guy in McDonald's at midnight doing a haka because they've run out of Big Macs.
Do you know my school used to make you do a haka?
Really? In Australia?
Yeah, in a very white school. I don't know if you can tell by looking at me. Yeah. Pretty white school.
You are very white.
That was our thing when we scored a try in rugby. We'd do like the ringer pakia.
Really?
Yeah.
I think cultural appropriation, man.
Yeah, I swear that like the translation that's of that so is kill the white man or something.
Yeah, that's so Australian.
It is, but it's not, but it is. Yeah. You know, it's like it's every level of like Australianism. It's just like we wouldn't do that weird New Zealand shit unless it makes us look tough, then we'll do it. But we shouldn't, and that makes us want to do it more. Like that's Australia.
Yeah.
But no, I actually forgot about that until right now.
Yeah, right. Well, but, I'm happy to help you resurface that memory.
Yeah, it was just weird. I'm like, yeah, because you're just like this 13-year-old kid and like, and then you do the spear going into the ground. And you're like, are you sure this is for us? Are you sure this is what we should be doing?
Yeah. Well, I did a sitcom over here a while back. I had a guest role on it. It was called Up the Woman, written by...
Up the Woman?
Up the Woman. Yeah, it was about suffragettes.
Okay.
And it was written by Jessica Stevenson from Spaced.
Yeah, these aren't ringing bells, but please continue.
No, but you know Spaced, don't you?
No.
Oh, mate, you got to check Spaced out. Simon Pegg's first sitcom with Nick Frost. Jessica Stevenson, and so she had this two series of a sitcom called Up the Woman, all set in the suffragette movement, and there was one episode where the New Zealand bowls team comes to play in their little village against their village bowls team.
Great, good content. I like it so far. Yeah.
And New Zealand was the first country in the world to give women the vote, 1893. I do know this. And so the whole gist of the episode is the men's bowls team telling the women they're not allowed to be in the village hall because women aren't allowed to play bowls. And the New Zealand bowls team's like, what are you on about?
Yeah.
So we enlist the woman to be on our team, you know, and I had this big speech about
you had a big inclusive speech?
Yeah, totally. And they wanted us to do a haka. And in the table read, they said to me, no, in my audition, they said, can you do the haka? And I said, well, yes and no. I can't do a haka properly because I've not practiced it for 20 years.
Right.
You know, and I'm rusty on it. And they said, yeah, but we want to have the haka in there. I was like, okay, well, can do that, but you need to. If it's going out on the BBC, you need to get in
consultant.
Yeah, someone to actually teach you how it's properly done, and the importance of it, because it is important. Because if you just do it a half-assed thing on a comedy show, people are going to rightly be upset.
That's gross. That's like a gross thing.
Yeah,
because it's like a significant thing.
Yeah, but I tell you what. The day of rehearsals when we got a guy from Ngāti Rānana, which is the tribe of London, and they do all the big events for New Zealand House and stuff over here. So he came in and I tried to the culture clash was spectacular The Māori tradition of doing a pōwhiri, which is a welcome, which he did, which can be quite long.
Sure.
And the director and producers going, yeah, we haven't got much time here. Can we speed through this? You know, and I'm sort of going, no, you're going to let him do the whole thing before we can get in. And they're like, yeah, but we've only got an hour and a half with him.
Yeah, the light's going.
You know, all that sort of business.
Studio space, yeah.
Whereas he's like, I need to follow all the protocols here.
Yeah.
But he's not saying that because he's in it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to hold the director back from every time he pauses, she's like, brilliant. And I'm like, no, he's not finished.
He's got some more time left on this welcome.
Yeah,
but you're going to feel fucking fun. Welcomed at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry.
Properly welcomed.
You'll feel good.
Yeah.
Okay, and you got him
good.
In.
It was good.
Yeah. So that were you playing a Kiwi?
Yeah,
on
I was a Kiwi.
That?
Yeah.
Well, we. I mean, I never know when I introduce people, but it's Jared Christmas.
It is Jared Christmas.
It's Jared Christmas, ladies and gentlemen.
Guys, it's me.
It's bloody Jared Christmas.
No imposters here.
I got Jared Christmas on when I got a Christmas tree in the corner.
Nice.
Yeah, appropriate.
And a Christmas tree down in your lobby.
Yes, we got a lobby tree.
Yeah, with your massive lift.
Yeah, everyone has got me about the size of my lift. It's a real lift shaming.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know, I'm just jealous.
Mate, we can get a bloody full table in there.
Yeah, I bet you can.
And a chair.
You know what I was thinking when I was in that lift?
Sure.
Was the amount of times I'd moved into, you know, apartments and stuff, and the lifts were like your normal size lift, and how annoying it is to try and get a corner sofa in that.
Yeah, because we got a bloody... Yeah, look, we got... That baby came up in the lift.
It's beautiful.
We got a corner sofa.
You wouldn't have had to dismantle that at all.
Nah, just straight
in
there.
That's a five-seater, mate.
Yeah, would have just gone in the lift. You could have sat on it in the
beautiful.
Lift. Bit of space. Get your dog in there.
I love it.
Classic England thing. Just bring your dog. You don't need the dog to be there. Fucking get it in there.
I love it.
Yeah, but, you know, I've never been in New Zealand.
It's okay.
You're as mysterious... You're the... I think I've been, apart from South Africa and Canada, I've been to every country that I've had a guest on from.
Oh, really?
And Barbados. Sorry, I forgot Barbados.
Right.
But like, yeah, you're as mysterious as them.
Great.
I mean,
good company to be in.
Yeah, I think so. But
yeah.
I feel bad about that. I don't know if that's slack.
What? No.
Have you been to Australia? You must have.
Yeah. Which part of Australia have you been to?
Sydney.
From Sydney.
I'm
yeah.
from Sydney, yeah.
I've not, it's always been for stand-up.
So it's been for work, yeah.
Yeah, apart from when my parents moved from, when did they do this? Maybe 15 years ago, they moved from Christchurch, New Zealand to Alice Springs. Because I think they were like, Christchurch is a little bit too hectic. We need to slow things right down.
Jeez, that's some different...
Yeah,
that's a sea change or a desert change?
Well, it was a weird combination of... So my dad was in the New Zealand Army, and when he retired from the Army... he got a job for the New Zealand Prison Service because it's a it's government run thing, so everything was transferable.
Yeah, right.
He took, you know, he's one of those blokes who never took a sick day. So
I love that. That's like one of those expressions, like never take a sick day. Like it's in the crime shows, like never even got a parking ticket.
Yeah.
But like, I bet your dad literally never took a sick day.
Never took a sickie, mate.
That's nuts.
So when he retired, he had an insane amount of sick days, like 200 sick days, you know, from a 25 career in the army.
Yeah.
And so when he became a prison officer, those sick days transferred over, and the people hiring him didn't realize that until it was too late, until he got the job, everything's processed, and then suddenly like, holy shit, this guy's got almost a year of sick days due. So they had to come up with a deal to basically buy off part of those sick days.
He sold his sick days?
Yeah, and then before he even started, they forced him to take like a month and a half of sick days. You know, because they're like, we can't have him holding these sick days over us, right? So I remember my dad retiring, getting a new job, and then just not going to work for like...
Ages.
Yeah, he basically renovated the house single-handedly, you know?
Wow, okay.
Whilst getting paid for it.
That's so weird. Why do they hate the idea of having... Because he could just take them at any time.
He could take them whenever he wanted, yeah.
I don't like that, as a prison.
Yeah, they're like, no, we don't want you...
They want to regiment it.
Yeah, yeah. We need to know when you're going to be sick, not on the day. But then a buddy of his started working in an Australian prison.
Okay.
And said, look, man, you get paid more. Alice Springs prison didn't even have walls, mate. You know, because it's in the desert, isn't it? Where are you going to run?
Fucking away?
Yeah, you can run away, but...
There's 360 degrees of away.
But good luck getting anywhere.
I mean, I don't know.
It's in the middle of nowhere. You can run away to nothing.
You could like Aquaman it, just be fine.
Yeah, of course.
Don't even need a drink.
Yeah, if you were Aquaman, I doubt you'd be in the light security prison of Alice Springs.
But I like the good like Australia New Zealand immigration narrative there.
Yeah, yeah.
Since I managed to go to Australia, why? You get paid more.
Get paid more. Just like it also coincided with my mum finding out she had a half sister who weirdly lived in Alice Springs. So these two things converged. Me and my brother weren't living at home anymore, so they were like,
why not?
Fuck it. Life's saying to go there, so let's go there.
And they're still there now?
No.
No,
so they did a fair chunk in Alice Springs, and then again they were like, oh, you know what, Alice Springs is just too hectic, so they moved to Derby.
They live
Derby
here now.
They moved to Derby.
Like here?
No.
Like
this Derby in Australia. So you fly to Perth, then you fly up to Broome.
Oh, yeah. I know where you are.
And then you drive for 4 hours to the nothing that is Derby.
Well, the way you were describing it, I thought it was the Derby here, because Derby here is a piece of shit as well.
Well, yeah, it's Derby over here. That wasn't even
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I know with sport it's Derby.
Yeah.
But I don't know with the town.
The place is Derby. Yeah, even though, yeah. So I mispronounced it initially, but Derby in Australia.
It's Derby, okay. Yeah. And they live up there, like Kakadu National Park kind of vibe?
Yeah, yeah, that, exactly yeah. that, yeah. And, okay. you know, they would just go, oh, we're just going out for an afternoon drive to Broome. You're like, that's 4 hours, man.
Yeah.
You know, and then they busted a gut there, and now they've retired on a little island off the coast of Brisbane.
Right.
Yeah.
So they've done the full Antipodean adventure.
Yeah, full whack.
Do you guys ever hear the term Antipodean in New Zealand?
No.
Right?
I had a routine about it when I first got over here. Because it means the Antipodes, which is the opposite of where you're from.
Yeah.
So technically, so my joke was, I would explain that. I go, never heard the term Antipodean or the Antipodes. And I found out it means the opposite side of the planet from where you're from. So technically, Australia and New Zealand, we would say that the UK... You guys are Antipodeans, but we don't say that because we don't know the fucking word. But I did genuinely, when I first got over here, have a really posh English girl
right.
at a party say to me, "You're so Antipodean." And I didn't know what that word was. You know, like, and the only thing I could relate it to was like troglodyte or something. And I was like, she's fucking insulting me.
Yeah, man. She's having a crack at me.
Yeah.
With this bloody Antipodean bullshit.
Yeah. And I got angry. I was like, why the hell are you calling me an Antipodean? I don't even know you.
Yeah, I'm no antipode, like, you fucking dog.
But
then,
you know, after all that anger, she just went, that is so Antipodean.
Just said damn it again. It's because they know. They know what words mean. Because they invented
it. Dictionary. Oxford Dictionary, mate.
Jerks.
Yeah, there's no Sydney Dictionary, is there?
I wish there was.
Yeah, Canberra Dictionary.
Sweet slang in there. That's sweet Aussie slang. We do good slang.
You know what? I heard an Australian say the other day, and it's a poetic... There's a couple... I think Australians are so poetic and don't mean to be, right? So... what did he say? I'm sweatier than a glass blower's ass.
Lovely.
Yeah, but it doesn't, like, does a glass blower's ass get, like, that specific knowledge?
I mean, you assume not. You assume there's not a lot of heat around the ass as the glass blower.
Yeah.
Because you're blowing with your mouth, you'd presume.
But.
Unless you're farting and blowing glass.
But that doesn't matter because you've got the glass blower. Ass. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's
just beautiful. Good.
There's so much assonance going on there.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
That is assonance. I knew that.
And when I gigged in Sydney, I did Penrith Football Club.
Oh, okay.
And
that is Western Sydney. That is quite rough. I think that place has the largest number of poker machines in like the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Some shit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's like, it's got like 1,000.
Yeah.
1,000.
1,000 poker machines.
1,000 pokies.
That is 1,000... depressed people at one time.
Yeah, and they're all 65 and above.
Yeah. So we did the Melbourne Comedy Festival road show.
Yes,
there.
Right.
And the night before, Rodney Rood had played there.
Rodney Rood, Australian comedy legend.
Legend.
How rude are you? There you go.
Well, I'm trying to remember my favourite Rodney Rood line. Did he do the one... well, he's humping me bum and he still isn't calm and me ass is as dry as his rock. That's him, isn't it?
I mean,
it's either him or Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Yeah, it'd be one of the two.
I mean, I always get those two mixed up.
I mean, how could you mix them up? I have no idea how Australian comedy kind of moved on from that. But we did quickly, I think.
Big time. But
even calling it as rock, you couldn't say that shit anymore.
Of course.
That'd be the rudest part of that joke.
Yeah, what rhymes with Uluru, though?
Fucking kangaroo, mate.
Kangaroo. Well, he's humping me bum like a kangaroo and it's as dry as... Nah,
it doesn't work.
That's why I'm not a musical comedian, mate.
Musical comedy's hard.
Yeah, it's real tough.
I'll fly to the Concords over here.
Yeah. I used to... my dad had a Kevin Bloody Wilson cassette and I used to sneak out of the house with my Walkman with that and I'd sit down at the bus stop and just listen to Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Secretly.
And just giggle.
Like ear
some
porn.
Of that shit's funny, man.
There's definitely funny bits in all those dudes. I haven't listened to Kevin Bloody. I didn't know about Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Really?
Until I got in. Because he still goes around.
Yeah, I bet. Like, he's got the... I heard some story. He's got the world record for most amount of booze sold at a gig.
I mean, that would not shock me at all.
No.
Hey.
Yeah.
Like booze per capita at a, like KBW? Fucking yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the old days, man. Because like Australia, like comedy, like a bit Wild West vibe.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and you know, I think
who was the other one? The guy who Ostentatious.
I didn't know him.
He's the guy who did the song Australiana.
Oh yeah, I know Australiana. Yeah.
And he just went around. There was like those three dudes, and they just roll through the RSLs of like country Australia, saying wrong shit,
laying waste to Australian comedy. Ugh. But you know, things like the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yeah,
I think. Probably had the effect on Australia much like the New Zealand Comedy Festival did. Suddenly, you were getting British comedians, like proper comedians, coming over, and that influence spread like wildfire. You wouldn't have Rose Matafeo if she wasn't exposed to fantastic comics early on, like Josie Long.
Right.
You know,
so you're just saying that like that's kind of developing now in New Zealand, because like this is like kind of the prime. Homegrown years, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, New Zealand's got amazing comics.
Oh, dude, at the moment. Yeah. You guys are absolutely crushing it.
Well, I mean, even when I started, there were brilliant comics, New Zealand comics. And some of them are still working today. And that's testament to how good they are. But in terms of influence for me, there wasn't a huge amount of it until I did the New Zealand Comedy Festival. And I encountered, you know, great British circuit comics, like Ben Norris. He was a huge influence on me.
He went around back then.
So Ben 99, he came to New Zealand and did a show. And I was doing a show with another New Zealand comic called Justin White. And our first night, we had to cancel because we had one person.
Of course.
I mean, we were willing to go ahead with the show.
Of course you were.
But our technician...
Was that one person?
Okay, so it was two people. She was like, "You guys are idiots if you go ahead doing a show to one person. Don't do this. Give her a ticket for another night. Yeah. Go and watch shows. You know,
that's actually quite wise.
It was great advice. Her name's Debs, and she still works in New Zealand comedy. Yeah,
still a big comedy New Zealand.
She started
legend.
Working for big theatre, and she was involved in the comedy festival for a while and stuff like that. Anyway, so I went and saw Brendan Lovegrove. Have you encountered him?
I know Brendan Lovegrove. Yeah.
So I went and saw Brendan.
If you know anything about New Zealand comedy, you know about Brendan
He's
Lovegrove.
He's the godfather, mate. I mean, he was a huge influence on me when I first started. I come over here and people were like, "Oh, who's your influence?" I was like, "Brendan Lovegrove." And they're like, "Who?"
Yeah.
You know, but New Zealand, everyone's like, "Yeah, we know Brendan." You know,
he's huge. He was the biggest thing.
He's awesome. And he still is awesome. But... So I went and saw his show, and then I went in to see Ben Norris, and he comes out on stage, and within a couple of minutes gets heckled. Not a bad heckle, just like a reaction heckle.
Yeah.
And he deals with it beautifully. And next thing, he's just riffing, and he after about 45 minutes of just playing with that audience, he stops. He's like, "I haven't even done any of my show. So I've got to at least do some of my show." So then he finishes his performance by doing 15 minutes of fantastic stand-up. You know, like Shakespearean porn. What would Shakespearean porn be like?
Right.
You know, and essentially...
so just like you kind of club...
Shakespearean language, you know, about in a porn film. And he had this great heckle put down of singing this song by Blur, Beetlebum.
Yeah.
But changing the lyrics to "You Touch Your Mum."
Oh, okay, yeah.
So good. Like, because it was a whole song, right? Yeah, I know it sounds like...
Just that one line.
Yeah. Anyway, so he gets a standing ovation at the end, right? Because it was electric. It was... Everything was in the moment. And then his prepared stuff even topped that stuff that was in the moment.
Right.
For me, I'd never seen that. Never seen it at all. And I'm pretty sure most of the audience had never encountered that style. So everyone's on their feet, you know, giving him an encore. And he was like, "I can't do an encore. There's a show immediately on after mine." And then he was like, oh, actually, it's the late show and I'm hosting it. So I guess if you want to see more, just stay in your seats and they'll come and collect your tickets. All the staff at the back are fucking losing their minds because they've got a queue of people outside.
Oh, of course.
Waiting to buy tickets. He's just fucked them over, yeah. Right? But anyway, it works out that, you know, I stick around for the late show. Nearly half that audience were in his earlier show.
Right.
So he walks out on stage. People are already on their fucking feet. Right? And this guy walks up to him and with a tray with a shot glass on it.
Yeah. Right?
And he hands it to him and he says, I was in your show earlier and I got this as a token of my appreciation. And Ben's like, oh, what is it? And he's like, it's tequila. I think you're amazing. Right. So Ben downs the tequila. And he's like, wouldn't this be a great thing throughout the night if you've really enjoyed a comic? Why don't you bring a shot up to the stage to the value of how much you've enjoyed that comic? Right. And it turned into this beautiful thing that comics would go on, smash it, and then next thing someone's handing them a shot of whatever. And there was one comic, I cannot remember his name, but he was dog shit. Utterly dog shit, but thought he was amazing. You know, so he finishes his set and it's been appalling. And this guy walks up with a tray with a shot glass on of clear liquid. And this guy goes, oh, thanks, man. What is that, vodka, tequila? He's like, nah, it's water, you shit. That was, you know, that's one of my very early comedy experiences. But, you know, Ben Norris's style was a huge influence on me back then.
Yeah, I mean, I think people who live over here and in the States would underestimate how isolated Australia and New Zealand can be from stuff.
Yep.
Like, to kind of see someone is just like, for him, it'd be like, yeah, this is just any other night, I'm working the thing.
Yeah.
Whereas you're like, holy shit, you can do that?
Yeah, yeah.
You can just riff off that thing? Yeah. You can work with the... What? Well, oh, my God.
You know, this is another story I loved saying about. It was the first time I went to Melbourne Comedy Festival in 2000. I wasn't performing there. I went to watch. And this is how awesome New Zealand is. Well, at that time, the government...
Some big up New Zealand?
Yeah, big up New Zealand. Strap yourselves in,
what
guys.
Do we got? They're giving you money? They're giving you some
totally
kind of money?
Wank off New Zealand.
This is some classic New Zealand shit.
Yeah. You know, if you look at the South Island, it does look a little bit like a willy, and the North Island is the jizz. Too much? All right.
All right.
So, Helen Clark was the Prime Minister, and she did this... She installed this thing called the Artist's Benefit, because she wanted to promote New Zealand creativity and art.
Of course, the artist benefit.
Yes.
Sounds suspiciously like welfare.
It was welfare, mate.
Yeah,
it
here
was.
We go.
So, you could go
New Zealand
in.
Have money for shit like this? It's the only country in the world.
We don't anymore.
It's like, do you have dreams? Let the government help. Like,
it was for a small window of about 4 or 5 years. There was, we're going to finance your dreams and your delusions. Stand-up comedian wasn't on the drop-down menu.
Right.
Yeah, that hurt.
So,
that
like,
hurt.
Was Jared Christmas climbing through this window? Is this
absolutely. So, I was getting, for the artist benefit, $80 a week, but you had to prove that you were pursuing your dream. Mm. You know, and I was running shows around Christchurch, and, you know, so I'd go in and show them flyers of shows, okay. You know, just to prove that
of
I'm
course.
Doing
like
stuff.
Photos of you on stage and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did a corporate... for Air New Zealand, where I got paid in return flights to Melbourne. So I was like, right, I'm going to go to the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
That's pretty sick, yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so I went into, you know, the government office I had to get my artist benefit from. And I said, I'm going to Australia for 10 days, so I'll need to put a stop on my benefit coming in weekly. And she was like, is this to do with your career? Is this to do with... With you becoming a stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
I was like, it's the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And she said, are you going to perform? I was like, no, I'm going over to research and, I guess, meet other comedians from around the world. And she went, well, that absolutely fits into to all the criteria. And she goes, do you need help with flights? I was like, no, flights are covered, but, you know, I've got to buy my own accommodation. She was like, well, I think we can help you out with that.
What?
It was like the opposite of what governments are like now.
Yeah.
Like the complete opposite.
Can you imagine that now? Just like, wait, can we give you money?
Yeah.
Are you sure you don't need our money? Aren't there going to be expenses?
It was crazy. And then when I got to Melbourne, I queued up at the box office. And I went from the airport, dropped my gear at the backpackers, and then went straight to the box office. And I said, I don't know any comics. Can you put put together an itinerary for me. And this girl was like, yeah.
So, I would love to.
Yeah. So, you know, I spent maybe probably 45 minutes with her, just her planning out my next four nights of entertainment. And so this is absolutely true, who I saw on my first night at Melbourne in 2000. I started off with Adam Hills, who was doing a show. I think it must have started at about 4:30 in the afternoon.
Wow,
right?
Okay.
He ended that show by getting a bunch of blokes up and getting them to do like boy band dance moves sort of thing.
He likes doing that, doesn't he?
And he, you know, I don't think anyone's better than him at that sort of stuff. I walked out of that show with a grin ear to ear thinking, that is like the, you know, a comedy and a motivational speaker. I've not just laughed, but I also feel really good about who I am.
He does do that, doesn't he?
He's very good at that.
The motivational thing.
Yeah.
Is it because he's got the foot?
Probably.
You reckon that's part of it?
Yeah, but just it must be.
Every part of his personality is positive.
Yeah. Like, and that's what it was.
And
you
it's
know?
Weird to laugh at that, but you do. Like I was always like, yeah, it's a good host and everything. Then I saw him live and I'm like, fuck, he's very good.
Yeah. And no one's the victim.
Yeah.
You know, it's all celebratory comedy, which is a hard angle to take.
Oh man, I can't do that.
No.
I need several victims.
It's too hard.
Yeah, it's like no
you
thanks.
You can't be happy all the time, mate.
Yeah, God.
So I saw him, and then the next show in the town hall, I went into the next venue and saw Adam Bloom.
Yeah.
And that was he did a whole section where part it was recorded and he's mouthing along to it. And then the recording stops and he's talking normally and he's playing with which bit's recorded and which bit's not. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow. He's doing that back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really
good. I thought that's like quite a recent little device, but geez, he was doing it all the way back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really
and that would have just blown your mind, right? As a guy
totally.
Who in New Zealand, no one's doing that.
I hadn't seen anything like it. And he did the joke, I think he became quite well known for it in Australia, of the swear words getting beeped out on TV on a live performance.
Okay. Yeah,
and then
it.
Him beeping, you know, going beep, 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 and spells out in Morse code, cunt. and going, I'd like to see them beep that out.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That was the essence of the joke.
Nice.
I stayed in that room after his show and watched Boothby Griffaux. Have you heard of Boothby Griffaux? Holy shit sticks, mate. Boothby Griffaux.
Holy shit sticks.
Is a British comedy legend. He's incredible. And he was the first comic I ever saw doing half-assed character acting, like a conversation going, oh, where have you been today? Well, I don't know where I've been today.
Right, the really exaggerated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the accents changing, you go, oh, you're from Sweden now?
Yeah, is that it?
You know, all that sort of
stuff. That shit that people, like, you know.
Loads of people do it now. But
and
back
now,
then,
like, that was 2000.
99.
99?
Yeah.
Okay, pre-millennium.
Yeah, and he'd probably been doing that sort of thing for a good few years through the 90s.
And so what, was it just like seeing all these dudes from the UK and stuff? It's like, because you left early.
It blew my mind, mate. And that night isn't done, mate.
That night isn't done.
That night is not done.
I was like, in Australia, three shows. That's a lot of shows.
I'm probably 8:30 now.
Okay.
Then I skip on over to the Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
And watch Johnny Vegas.
Johnny Vegas is there.
Johnny Vegas did his pottery show.
Yeah.
And the line he kept repeating was, I'm not a comedian. I'm an entertainer. you know, obviously that's an awful impression. But
I mean, I liked it. I felt it.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
He overran so much that I missed Bill Bailey. I had tickets for Bill Bailey.
Oh,
and to this
wow.
day, I've never seen Bill Bailey live.
That was not meant to be.
Yeah. And I remember walking out of Johnny's show just like, oh, I know nothing.
Yeah.
I know nothing. And I went up to a Melbourne Comedy Festival person at the Hi-Fi. And I said, look, you know, I know I can't get a refund on this ticket. Johnny's overrun. And I can't see Bill Bailey, but I really want to watch another show. Is there anything else starting now that I can possibly see? And this guy was like, oh, Johnny Vegas always overruns. He goes, look, I'll sneak you into a show it's sold out, but it's just started and you can stand at the back. I was like, okay, awesome.
Nice.
And he takes me into this tiny room and it's the fucking Mighty Boosh.
What?
So you know, in one night. That's one night. I've gone from thinking stand-up is a dude, sometimes a woman, at a mic, telling jokes, telling stories.
Yeah.
To suddenly, I didn't sleep that night, man. Top bunk at the Backpackers.
Nice.
Just staring at the ceiling going, you can do anything.
Right.
On stage, as long as it's funny. That's the bottom line. As long as it's funny, but you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, and that would have just been mind exploding.
Mate.
Mind expanding.
I went back to New Zealand a changed comedian. People right. were like, your style's changed. And I was like, my world has changed, you know? I was experimenting with all this shit that I've
You're a born again. Seen. Born yeah. again comedian.
Yeah.
You're just like, everything's got to change. I can yeah. turn this life around.
And it was good to have it that young, I think.
Yeah. You know, how old were you then?
18.
18. Wow, yeah. that is young. Yeah. And you were already performing at 18.
Yeah. Yeah, I started stand up just after my 18th birthday.
Right.
Oh, no, 2000, I would have been 19 because I started 98 and
right.
then
okay.
turned 20 when I moved over here. I moved over here at 20. Had my 21st birthday here, yeah.
Right. And then have you been here pretty much?
Since, yeah.
Like 100%. Are you got a family?
Yeah, I got a family, wife, kids.
And that's all over here?
All over here.
They English?
They are English, yeah.
They are English. Yeah. Okay. So you've completely given it up.
Yeah.
You've given up the New Zealand, the yeah, South and why, the North Island.
I haven't given up New Zealand, but I just realized, you know, live comedy, I can make a really good living here.
Well, yeah, here has the live comedy culture.
Yeah.
And the country size and the popular, like, you know, it's just yeah. got everything kind of lines up.
Well, New
nice.
Zealand's what, 4.5 million? You know, London has got double that population.
Yeah.
You know, when I moved over here to London, you could do on a Monday night, open mic level, you could do 4 gigs in a night on a Monday.
Wow.
You know, so they weren't all good gigs.
Yeah, of course.
You know, some of them were, you know, barely a gig, but it was stage time.
Yeah.
You know?
So there was a lot more here when you started. Like
a lot, because there was a lot less comics.
You know, okay.
you'd bump into the same people everywhere. And on a Friday, Saturday, there wasn't... The only gig was the Comedy Brew House, which is Angel Comedy now.
Oh, okay.
Camden Head, upstairs yeah, yeah, at Camden yeah. Head. So that was called the Comedy Brew House. And that was the only open mic gig running on a weekend. So if you weren't performing there and you weren't doing an open spot at an established club, then you weren't working.
You weren't working.
Yeah.
And did it take you long to be able to make a living here?
I got a day job, charity fundraising on the street.
Charity fundraising on the street? Yeah, man. Oh, man. Everybody loves those yeah. guys.
Samaritans, ActionAid.
Yeah.
I was in the early days where it was a bit of a curiosity. So,
right.
you know, I had days where I signed up, you know, like 12 people for a £5 sponsorship of old people, you know. So
you're like the first person I've met who's like talking about the good old days,
the good old days of
charity mugging.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, I remember back in the day, people would sign up. They used to care.
Yeah, it was the glory days, mate.
Not anymore. You should have seen my pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, hey, sir, got a minute for charity? And they were like, of course.
But they weren't. They were like, people would come up to you and go, so what are you doing? And you go, well, I'm signing people up to, you know, help the aged. Oh, really? So what, talk me through that.
You know? Tell me
and,
about this.
Whereas near the end, you know, I did that for maybe, wasn't, yeah, nearly a year.
Right.
Near the end of that year, hey, so what are you doing? Turn to, why don't you fuck off, mate?
Yeah, and it stayed that way.
And it stayed that way since.
Ever since.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that I was doing that, but it took me just over a year.
To start.
A year and a half, probably.
To start working.
Yeah, I probably quit my day job, I'd say nearly, easily 8 or 9 months too soon. I got a big job for Malibu that paid me like $3,000.
Malibu?
Malibu.
As in like the rum?
Yeah. So they had a...
What? Cheeky summer rum?
Mate, they had a campaign called about laughter.
Okay.
Right. So they had this great idea. Let's send comedians into nightclubs on Friday and Saturday nights. The DJ will turn the music off.
Oh, no.
Then the comedian will tell 10 minutes of jokes
oh, no.
while hot girls hand out vouchers for free Malibu, but not, but just the Malibu. You have to buy the mixer. So, of course, the first night we do it, it's an absolute disaster.
Of course.
People are dancing. Next thing, the music stops. Right, we've got a comedian. And everyone's like, what the fuck?
Were you getting booed? Was it like booze going on?
I had a megaphone. I didn't have a microphone. I had a megaphone.
Oh, no.
So I'm standing there with a loud hailer, sort of trying to angle it up so I'm not blasting it into people's ears.
Yeah.
And just having people standing right next to me going, what the fuck are you doing? And then...
he's got this adorable New Zealand accent. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's like, what?
Oh, come on, guys. This is going to be great. You know? I'm living my dream. The New Zealand government helped me get here.
Yeah.
But,
blame their arts grant.
And then, you know... these people go up to the bar with their Malibu vouchers and then they're told they have to pay £1.20 for the Coca-Cola to go with it. And then they're like, what the fuck is this? So within 5 or 6 minutes, there's just anger in the room. So we ran away. And after that, it was decided that we would go into the nightclubs and just circulate handing out the vouchers.
Right.
And the guy managing my team that I was involved in was like, you've just got to tell jokes to people on an individual basis. And I was like, yeah, sure.
Fine.
And of course, never did that.
Of course
not.
Because
it's a nightclub, loud music.
Yeah, they're just like, I definitely told him. You weren't there, but he loved it.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous campaign. But I got paid $3,000 just before Christmas. And so I went into the bank. And this, again, this is a different time, man.
A different time?
Because the bank manager says, oh, you got $3,000 in the bank. Do you want an overdraft on that account? I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, okay, $1,500. He said, if you open up another account, I can give you another $1,500 overdraft. And I was like, let's do that. He goes, have you thought about getting a credit card? And I was like, yeah, sure. Well, what limit could I have? $2,000 limit on that credit card? Sure thing, mate. Do it. And that's what I lived off. That's why I quit my job.
This is why my generation is so pissed. Just like in a nutshell.
Sure, but...
here, Australians and New Zealanders move here. We can't even get a bank account because we don't have a fixed address. So we have to like use this weird orange thing. I'm a Monzo. You seen Monzo?
That no,
dude. I got a Monzo. I don't even know if I'm gonna sign up to the NHS. Like, I don't know. It's absurd that people used to be welcoming and they're like, we got money. Have some of the money.
It wasn't welcoming.
It wasn't
like,
welcoming.
To get my first bank account was really hard. Really hard.
Oh, okay. Well, this is fine. This is now back on the right narrative.
I had to have an address, and I had to have a utility bill made out to me.
Oh, okay.
So I moved in with a friend of a friend, and he I don't know if it was kind, but, you know, he helped me out by putting my name on the phone bill.
Sure.
You know, but I had to wait a month.
Yeah.
You know, and so no bank account.
Okay, well, that...
And then no place would give me a job because they couldn't pay into a bank account.
Right. Do you know what I mean?
So for a month... I'm doing, I did a couple of tally sales jobs where I got paid a check, but then I've got nowhere to bank that check. So I was going to cash converters.
Oh, using the instant cash for checks.
Yeah, but they were taking 20%.
Yeah, of course they are, because it's the cash for checks. Yeah. It's for people like you.
Yeah.
You don't deserve 100% of that money.
No way.
Like 80s generous.
Yeah.
You're going to spend it on something drug related.
Yeah, and then I needed to have proof of income to open up a bank account.
Well, see, this is a funny, this story is like, because I don't know, I never know if people are like aware of the way that they're spoken of in like a comedy community.
Right.
And the way that you have been spoken of to me is that you have kind of been instrumental in every other New Zealand comedian coming to the UK.
Right.
You've had this hard experience.
Yeah.
And then you've help them. This is what I've been taught. It's like, dude, Jared Christmas is responsible for all these fucking Kiwis here doing comedy.
I don't know.
They stayed on his couch. He helped them out with the thing. Like, he got it all done.
Right.
So you were like the first crusader.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was guys before me who helped me out. There was a Kiwi comic, Terry Frisbee, who...
Terry Frisbee?
Terry Frisbee,
that's amazing. Yeah. That's one of those, like, definitely not still working comedian names, you know? Like, Terry Frisbee.
No, Terry was always... he always had really high paying day jobs. So comedy was really for him.
Was his real name Terry Frisbee?
Terry Frisbee, yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
that's his real name. Stage name.
No,
for sure.
his real name.
So Mr. Frisbee, he grew up in Invercargill.
Yeah, he grew up in Invercargill. My cousins know him and his brothers. The Frisbees, yeah, we know them. The Christmases and the Frisbees, they all hang out. It's ridiculous. But no, I did what I could to help New Zealand comics. You know, me and my wife ran a Kiwi comedy night called Four Kiwis Walk Into a Bar.
Right.
And so any Kiwis coming over, we always put them on. But that gig started with a bunch of us over here in like 2001, and we never got booked on the same lineup together. Do you know what I mean?
You're not going to get like two Kiwis on the same bill.
No. Yeah. What is this, a benefit? and, you know, so we set it up so once a month we could hang out.
Right.
You know, and in the early days of that gig, we were playing to maybe 20 people. I remember we booked Danny Boy to do the gig.
Yeah.
And I had to pay him 200 quid out of my own pocket because we only got 15 people.
Even though he had Danny Boy on.
Yeah.
He's very famous.
Yeah. You know, but then that gig built up to we had a good sort of 8 years where it was sold out every month, like 200 people.
Right.
And so,
because there is a big Kiwi community in London.
Very loyal. They'll come out for Kiwi stuff.
Yeah, I think you guys are more loyal than Australians for sure.
Australia's too big.
You think we're
too big? You're just too big. You know, look at rugby. Australia is big in the rugby world, but in Australia, rugby's fuck all.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your own game, Aussie rules.
Great game, best game.
Best game ever.
Love
that, it. You know, your country's big enough to... It doesn't have to be played anywhere else in the world. The Irish play it, but it's like variation.
Well, they do their thing with the round ball.
Yeah.
You know, those bloody soft Irish with their round ball. None of that,
yeah,
mate.
They know where it's going to bounce.
Yeah, oh, cool. You want consistent bounce, do you, loser?
So I just think it's a size thing, you know?
A size thing. I just think like the Kiwi community over here, like if you look at any of the Facebook things, like the number of like people in the Kiwis in London and stuff is way higher than the number in like Australians in London. There just must be more Australians. Like there's no way.
I think it's just a numbers thing, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got millions and we've got 4.5 million.
That's what I meant. So like there must be more here, but I don't think we want to associate, you know what I mean? Like we don't want to be brand Australia.
Yeah.
Like we're the people who like, you know, the cricket bat, you take the stickers off.
Yeah.
That's Australia. It's like, well, no, we don't know. We're using a Slazenger, you know, like this, we just want the wood.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know why.
Although when you know, when those walkabout pubs were massive, seriously, it was just packed with Aussies and Kiwis and South Africans.
Yeah. They were the good old days.
I went to a few of those. They were horrible.
Horrible? Just a horrible experience?
Yeah. It was just full on meat market.
I mean, I like, because I run the Australian show in London here now. And I got to say, just doing a comedy show to Australians is very nice.
Yeah.
As someone who does, I don't think of myself as particularly Australian or really like fly the flag or anything like that. But it's very nice.
Yeah.
To just get a bunch of us in a room. Yeah.
And I don't think you need to fly the flag. I've never been, when I first got over here, my material was like, in New Zealand we do this and over here you do this. But you work through that, don't you?
Of course.
That's you growing as a comedian and working with what you know. But the Kiwi show, you know, for me, you know, we sold Kiwi treats there.
Yeah.
You know, but I would always say to the comics, play it like it's a London gig because these people have been living in London.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the comics who wouldn't go quite so well were the ones who would go on and try and do their very New Zealand specific comedy.
That was a nice time for you to say specific.
Specific.
I enjoyed that. Specific. Just like very New Zealand specific.
Specific.
Yeah. No, but your accent, obviously you've been here so long, yours flips. I can hear the flip in it.
Can
like
you?
Yeah, because like just certain words, you know?
Yeah.
You've picked up the English.
Yeah, there's words that I've had to adapt the English pronunciation just so I can survive.
Yeah.
You know, I got very sick of people when I asked for a pen. People are like, what do you want? What do you want? A pen? I'm saying pen.
Well, that's a hard one. Pen.
Pen.
What is it? Have you changed it? Is this the current one that we're working
pen.
With?
I say pen. Don't I say pen?
Yeah. I mean, I'm having no trouble with it. Was it no, before like pen? Like,
yeah, real key when I first got over here. So I just started saying writing implement. I mean, I could have said Bic.
Yeah, that, what a solution. Yeah. I like it.
And, you know, but then when the first time I went back to New Zealand, I found myself asking for a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone was like, what the fuck are you on about, mate?
Yeah.
You want chips? Chops?
How often do you go back? Do you go, is it a regular thing?
For a few years, it was once a year. But now with my kids, you know, it's the best part of $6,000 to get the whole family back there. And I'm not the type of father that I want to spend to go, all right, you know, I did it a few times when the kids were really young. But, you know, being away from them for like a month, it's horrible.
Yeah,
it's horrible
sure.
for my wife. It's horrible for me. It's horrible for them. So it's forced me to prioritize where I perform, you know. And that's, so I've not really been back to New Zealand properly in maybe 3 years now.
Yeah.
Because I've been really focusing on gigging in the UK, bit into Europe. Just so, you know, I don't have to spend a month away from them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I just know, like, you know, some people kind of do like that regular trip, like it's like a part of the thing.
But they're all single comics, man.
Yeah.
Or they're of a level of selling tickets that they can take their families down there.
Right. It's like, it's a holiday that they pay for.
Yeah.
During. Yeah, yeah. I get
and,
that.
And, you know, if I was in that situation, then yeah, I'll be yanking my kids out of school.
Yeah.
Fly them down to Australia, chuck them in an Aussie school for 6 weeks. You know, sure, it's going to be weird for them, but also hell of an experience, right?
Yeah.
Hell of an experience for daddy to live his dream.
Are they fascinated by the New Zealand thing? Like, because if your wife is from here and, like, you guys live here, I assume it's not, like, a huge part of the culture, like, or is it? Like, do you kind of be like, you're a Kiwi, all right? You got to know this stuff. You got to know a haka. We're gonna, here's the guy. He's going to welcome you for ages. But like,
no, there's a little bit of it.
I just don't know. I see New Zealand as like the more prouder of the two, like Australia, New Zealand. Like, and I'm like, just curious, because obviously you just spent so much time here. It's been like, what, almost 20 years?
Yeah, like, 18 years.
Yeah.
No, I'm incredibly proud to be a Kiwi and get so emotionally proud of Kiwis doing well.
Right.
And I think there is a thing in New Zealand called tall poppy syndrome where, you know, people tear you down if you fucking stick your head above the parapet. But there's also this intense pride of like, we're so fucking tiny, mate. And now they did 2 series on HBO.
Yeah, right. That's nuts.
That's huge. Well, Rhys Darby's in movies.
Yeah.
Temuera Morrison's in movies. Peter Jackson made Lord of the fucking Rings. But we're tiny, mate. We're right down. We're nearly in an Antarctica, mate. You know? So there's this real sort of like, yeah, Kiwi did go. You're fucking.
Well, I think. Was like Flight of the Conchords, like, was that like a turning point in terms of New Zealand comedy? Like, did that kind of. Rub off on you in any way? Did it create like a taste for it? Like these Kiwis are funny.
Yeah. I mean, I was already over here, you know,
established
and making a living. And, and you know, I'd met them a couple of times in New Zealand, but I'd never really, cause I left in 2000 when, cause back then, I met Taika and Jermaine when they were doing a double act called Humor Beasts.
Okay.
And I remember that being insanely funny.
Right.
And so I didn't know about Flight of the Conchords until they came to Edinburgh in about 2004, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I watched them in one of those shitty cave venues.
Yeah.
You know, where to step on stage, you're stepping over a pool of unknown liquid.
There's that drip.
Yeah.
Good cave drip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the cave walls are sweating.
And like no fire, like just like fire means death.
Yeah.
Like those Edinburgh venues. Yeah.
And I think it was 2004 that Ed Burns' brother, Paul, got scarlet fever from working in the caves for the whole month.
He got scarlet fever?
You know, went to the hospital and they were like, what the hell is this? And they were like, we haven't seen a case of this in 20 years. That, you know, that sort of shit. Now, I don't know how much of that is comedian myth, but he did get sick that year. But I remember seeing Concords 2004 because they were Kiwis.
Yeah.
And Rhys Darby's show was on after theirs or something like that. And they were dicking around on each other's show.
Mm.
And I believe that's where the whole, you know...
The character that he played, yeah.
Yeah, came from was them dicking around to nobody in Edinburgh. I think that's where it came from. I could be completely wrong.
Yeah.
My memory is that they started dicking around. Like, you know, Reese would walk out to seven people in the audience and be going, oh, I've got a big crowd for you here, guys. I've really... really worked hard on the manager, you know, and then bring them out to seven people.
Yeah, right.
But what happened was, you know, comics like Daniel Kitson, John Oliver, who else was really big, Adam Hills, all started really championing Flight of the Conchords. Dimitri Martin was there that year.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he was doing really
well. They got that festival buzz.
Yeah, so all these, you know, really well-known comics in Edinburgh were talking about them. So, you know, suddenly they start getting bigger houses and stuff like that. And, yeah. You know, then the next year they were playing, you know, a massive venue and they're selling it all out and they got nominated and...
Right, all that stuff. Yeah. And then they got the series after that.
They did BBC radio series first.
Uh-huh.
And again, I might be wrong on this, but my memory of it is that they were very clever with that radio series. Because if you listen to it, it's great, but they don't play full songs. Because if they played the full song, then the BBC would have rights over it.
Right.
And they wouldn't be able to use it.
In future shows. Future TV. Yeah. Wow, that is clever.
So if you listen to that radio show, you just get snippets of their songs.
Yeah. So like...
And there's a great episode in it where they go back to New Zealand and Reese, the manager character, Brian, who was in the radio series, he tries to get some publicity on a local radio station. And the local radio DJ and him used to go to school with each other and they hate each other.
Yeah.
And it turns into a proper disastrous argument sort of radio interview. And that's a great episode. the radio presenter is called J-Bone. And I mean, that was an excellent performance by the comedian who played that part.
Really?
Yeah, like... one of the greatest performances you'll ever hear.
Nice, J-Bone.
J-Bone. Yeah, I mean, the comic, nice guy.
Really?
Really nice guy. And, you know, it was... I think he did really well with it.
Like, how long do you want to draw this thing out? Like, I can reveal it the next going. Episode.
I think if anyone's still listening, they're like, all right, mate, we get it.
Yeah, it was you. We got it.
Yeah, it was you.
It might have been Jack.
What a dick.
No.
And they recorded part of it at our Four Kiwis show.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
So they wanted live gig sound. So they did a show at our
thing.
And Terry Frisbee introduced them. So he's on the radio show as well.
Mate, this is what you mean about New Zealand being small. Every character you've introduced has then been reintroduced into another anecdote.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's a small pool, mate. Small pool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have any like plans to go back to New Zealand? Like to potentially live there?
I don't know. I never want to say never. I mean, my dream would be to you know, for my kids to go to university in New Zealand.
Why is that?
But what an experience to be able to go to New Zealand for 4 years and live in Wellington or Auckland and go to university there instead of going to university in the United Kingdom. I mean, that's cool, isn't it?
University here sounds pretty fun, though, as far as I can tell.
University here sounds fun. But if you're English, just the novelty factor, you'd make so many friends so quickly. Like, oh, have you met this English person? You're just studying, you know?
Yeah, it'd be exciting for them. Yeah,
my wife would hate it because she's like, they're too far away. I can't hang out with them.
And I'm
like, but this means we can go back and visit them. We can stay on their couch.
She's got no interest in the New Zealand?
She loves New Zealand.
Oh, she loves it?
Yeah, she's been there with me a handful of times. The kids have been as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely adore it. I mean, she was like, maybe we should move to New Zealand for a year, you know, just as an experience for the kids
waters,
and stuff like that. I was like, but I wouldn't make a living down there.
Well, I mean, that's it, isn't it? If you're in this kind of game, especially live, like if you're talking live and you're not writing for doing radio or some shit... I mean, obviously, you could do radio quite well because you famously play J-Bone.
Yeah, great voice for radio.
Yeah.
Face for radio.
Ah, there we go.
That's the joke, isn't it?
You didn't do a joke. You just complimented yourself.
Which as an Australian or a Kiwi is fucking unacceptable,
yeah,
mate.
Unacceptable, like, mate. You've been over here too long.
Don't you dare big yourself up.
Yeah.
What are you, an American? What do you got, confidence?
Ugh, but, makes me sick.
But yeah, no, it's you don't really have a choice.
No, and you know, there's not.
Which is a bit sad.
Yeah. And there's TV opportunities in New Zealand, but it's pretty sewn up.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be quite difficult to swan in there and, you know, just get on the stuff.
Yeah,
that
because they would have, there'd be like the production line, right? Australia's a lot like that. You go to this university, you do this whatever review, like the law review, and then you start writing for this thing, then you're on this one, and then...
Okay.
And then you,
I didn't
then
know
you,
that about
then
Australia.
Then you flush down again, and then you go back up. But no, it's small, like...
Yeah, of course. Well, New Zealand, you've got these guys who have been working, busting a gut to get these TV shows to happen and create them and keep them going.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, they've done the hard work on those things. And then for you to sort of come in and presume that...
Man, I don't know if you know this, but I'm actually pretty huge.
Pretty big deal in Birmingham.
Yeah, big in Birmingham.
Yeah.
But do you think being from New Zealand has helped you here?
Yes.
In what sense?
In the sense that it's a bit different. You know, when I started playing in places like Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds, Newcastle, I never suffered from that north-south divide that they genuinely have over here of, you know, a southern comic playing. It's not so bad now, but when I, you know, 18 years ago.
That used to be worse.
Oh, my God. The Frog and Bucket of Manchester?
Yeah.
You go on there with a posh English voice?
What, they throw stuff at you?
Yeah, I saw people get torn apart just for... Right. Just for having a southern
so that's
accent.
That's relaxed a bit.
I think it has relaxed a bit.
Do you think that's because there's kind of more movement within the UK now?
Yeah, I think so. But you still see subtle bullshit.
Yeah.
Especially about northern comics. They get called northern comics.
That's true.
You know, where
they're not
someone
comics
from the south,
they're northern
doesn't get
comics.
Yeah, they don't get called southern comics, do they?
No.
You know, they're just called comedian, blah, blah, blah.
They get called TV comics.
Yeah. You know, so there is subtle things, but I think...
So you just get to dodge that. Yeah, as like a Kiwi, everyone's like, wait a second. Let's give the man a chance.
And also, I think there's a fondness over here for Kiwis.
Right.
More so than... People over here like Australians, but, you know, there was all that bar staff sort of joke and shit like that, which doesn't happen in... You know, 18 years ago, the go-to joke about Australians was they work behind the bar.
I mean, I've currently got a bar staff joke, but thanks. Good to know. I'm 18 years too late on that one. My joke is currently legal, apparently. Yeah. What a lovely time. No, it's like, I think it's the Australian thing. It is nice, but I think New Zealand, you're just exotic.
Well, I likened it to, I would say, you're not allowed to, you know, like, Australians is like, oh, our cousin's from Australia here.
Yeah.
Yay. Whereas New Zealanders is like, oh my God, you made it? You actually made it here? Wow, good for you. We're delighted you're here.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
They like picture you like got a yacht and just kind of made it.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, they're good at sailing. They just bring themselves here. It's not Qantas. Like,
they've won cups, mate.
They're very good.
Yeah.
But do you fall into any of the New Zealand stuff, like your rugby? Does it come close to the heart, the old All Blacks and stuff like that?
Yeah, it does. I've always...
Does that dissipate or does it just stay?
It stays. But that's because I've always really liked rugby.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not an obsessive following them.
Yeah.
And I don't get, you know, I'm like, I don't go and see them live. I don't, you know, can get upset if I miss a game.
Yeah.
But the other day, the All Blacks Ireland game.
Right.
I had just got back into Stansted and I was having to drive to a gig and I had to pull over because I was listening to it on the radio. So I pulled over and sat in my car listening to the game. Because it was too tense.
Yeah, you couldn't drive.
Yeah.
You couldn't drive with this much action on the radio.
And then it turned out that I parked outside of McDonald's. And then it turned out that it was only a 45-minute parking zone, and I ended up getting a 60-quid fucking parking to listen to an All Blacks game that they lost. So, but yeah, I guess,
is maybe the most like New Zealand fucking thing I've ever heard. That's sick. That's so good.
60 quid, mate? That's like $130.
Oh,
130
man.
New Zealand dollars. That's a hotel room.
Does, Does that ever like just tempt you, like just going back to New Zealand, being like, if we convert all our pounds into New Zealand dollars, I'll be a fucking millionaire.
Yeah, I used
like,
to think
this
that
is wild.
When I go back, I was like, oh mate.
Back in the day when the exchange was like, oh,
3 to 1.
Surely you guys would have gone 4. We were 3.
I don't know if it got up to 4.
You guys, because
I know in 2009 when I first went back. So I didn't go back for 9 years. I went to Australia probably 4 times before I went back to New Zealand.
Really? Like you just were chasing the comedy like that hard. You were like, I don't have gigs in New Zealand. I got them in Australia.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it just worked out that way, you know?
I know, dude, I get that stuff, but that's still, you know, 9 years.
It was a long time, yeah.
I feel like now people go back more.
Yeah.
And like you Skype more as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like my mum always gets me that because she wants me to like Skype her and I do it and she's like, this is so casual.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to have to write letters.
Yeah.
We used to not be able to see the country, you know?
I used to phone my parents from phone boxes, public pay phone boxes because I had a long distance calling card that I would top up. No, I'd have to buy a brand new card.
Right.
Because you know
it was that far. Like New Zealand was that much. Yeah,
so
yeah,
you go into the phone box and you dial a number that's on the card.
Yeah.
Right. And then you'd scratch off a scratchy bit. And then you'd enter in the code that was in there. And then you would you'd get an operator and you'd tell them New Zealand and then give them that number. And then they'd connect you. And so I used to stand in the phone boxes and chat to my parents for 20 minutes until my card ran out.
That is quaint.
Yeah.
That's next level.
Quaint.
I don't know.
The thought of calling overseas on a mobile phone back in 2001, you're like, are you insane?
This will never work.
Yeah.
Wait. So before you came over here, like, because you would have had internet back then, but not kind of internet like it is now.
No.
So like,
it was email.
Yeah. But like, did you just, it was just kind of like a leap. Like you wouldn't have, did you know people? Did you just...
Yeah, no, I did. I knew some people who were over here, yeah.
Yeah, because like for me, I mean, it was like, it was genuinely, like I'd been here like maybe 4 times, just traveling anyway.
Yeah.
I had friends here, I had comedian friends here. Like it was a joke. Like it was, it's so easy.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, oh, it's really hard to pack your life up and go. No, it's not. No. Like just jump on a plane, you can go back whenever.
Yeah, at 20, I had nothing really to pack up of my life. But so it did the classic thing of my dad's cousins are English.
Of course,
because my dad was born in England. That's why I've got a British passport.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, my dad rings them up. He's not spoken to them in 25 years. Do you know what I mean? Through the family connection, sort of whatever, he gets their number, he rings them up. Yeah, my son's flying over to London. Can you guys pick him up from Heathrow? And they're like, yeah. Sure.
Just, you know, those other things that would never happen now.
And so they pick me up at people I'd never met.
Yeah.
Pick me up
like,
at
hello
6:30 in the morning at Heathrow, and they take me to their house in Edgware. And I have my first ever full English fry up.
Yeah, they do the thing.
Yeah.
They do the proper thing.
Yeah, sitting at their dining table, looking out into their garden, and there were 2 squirrels, and I lost my shit. Because we don't have
the
squirrels.
The first time
in New Zealand.
You see a squirrel.
It's incredible.
It's crazy.
It's incredible.
Because they're like, oh, these fucking rats. And it's like, no.
What are you on about? Look at how they run. Their tail stays like in the same position, but their body's moving. It's incredible.
That's the thing. They look like they're constantly jumping over barrels.
Yes.
Like it's not the flat. It's like just the...
It's like they're playing Donkey Kong.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right. Oh, man. No, it's so funny. Those like first things where you're like, what?
Because
like, I think it's a bit different in New Zealand just because you guys have a more similar climate.
Yeah.
But like... As an Australian person, to come to England and be like, oh, that's the farm from the book, from the TV show, from every piece of artwork we've ever been exposed to.
Yeah.
Because like, I go to my nan's farm and there'll be like thistles and rocks and snakes. And like, you know, you're just kind of like, what the fuck's this shit?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go to England and you're like, yes, rolling hills, tiny stones piled on top of each other.
Oh, snowing at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Like growing up in New Zealand, I was like, what are you on about? Why is there movies about it snowing at Christmas time?
And like, it just makes so much more sense to have it around Christmas because like we're in that now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, the weather sucks.
Yeah.
It is grim. But because of Christmas, there is this social contract
There's a glimmer of hope.
You have to be out all the time. You're constantly hanging out. The streets are full. People are happy because we're like in the build up to this thing.
Yeah.
Whereas in Australia, it's like, why do we have to go inside and have lunch? It's fucking great outside. Yeah, let's go out there.
Well, we never had inside lunches. We always had barbecues at Christmas Day.
Yeah. Is it
my first indoor Christmas was when I moved over here and it fucking snowed.
And it snowed.
Proper snow.
Bloody pre-climate change. Yeah. What a time.
I lost my mind, mate. Squirrels in the snow at Christmas.
This is nuts.
Yeah.
This is everything.
Eating bangers and mash.
I gotta buy a phone card. Call my parents. They're not going to believe this shit.
I'm going to go out in the snow to a phone box.
All right. Yeah. Dude, we gotta go. You gotta be somewhere. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what you were wanting to achieve from this.
I mean, that was pretty much it. I had some more stuff about New Zealand, but
go on then.
No, I mean, I'm not
quick
gonna
fire.
I gotta be honest. I'm quick not gonna fire. Chop it in. Like what? Yeah, I'm just gonna do heaps of editing. Nah.
No, no chance.
No, the only thing I was gonna talk about was the difference between Australia and New Zealand with the treaty,
right?
Of Waitangi and how I think that really does shape the mindsets of both countries.
I think so.
And I can't explain why. And I was wondering if you had like a good line on it. Just because like the Australian thing, it's like this constant thing where it's like, as a white Australian, if you're like in any way self-aware,
yeah,
you're like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, yeah.
We know we shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that we're here. This land is uninhabitable for people who look like us, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a nightmare. Whereas like in New Zealand, it's kind of like, it seems calmer, but I've never been. So like, I don't know if there's kind of more racism than, more of that than you'd think.
Yeah, well, Taika Waititi came out recently and said, New Zealand's incredibly racist.
Right.
And I've not lived back there, but I can see that. But I look at the difference between Australia and New Zealand is how each country was settled. So Australia, famously penal colony, all that sort of stuff. Right? Yeah. Whereas New Zealand was almost accidentally colonized. It was it was entrepreneurs. It was whalers. It was people going down there for the lumber. It was businessmen.
Right. You know, I didn't know that. Yeah, I honestly thought you guys were convicts as well.
There was no British military presence in New Zealand for ages. There was a token gesture. The Treaty of Waitangi was signed by, I think, the British guy was a Navy lieutenant who got promoted to a captain.
Right.
Just so
he not
could,
anywhere near the top. Yeah. He was just like some officer in the army.
Well, Britain wasn't interested. Yeah. You know, there was a small contingent of British Navy in New Zealand, and there was a guy writing back going, we need to get on top of this because, you know, there's forests, there's people making money down here. You know, everything that was started in New Zealand was started by businessmen and entrepreneurs.
So the British only kind of claimed...
They came in very... Probably not very late.
Just to get a cut of the profit, essentially. Yeah, just essentially. To regulate this business.
Yeah, but they did it in a really half-assed way as well.
Okay.
Like, you know, it was all being driven. And that's why I think you've got, in New Zealand, you've got a lot of forward sort of thinking. Is because, you know, early on, it wasn't just businessmen. It was businesswomen as well.
Right.
You know what I mean? Women were a huge part of the economy. So, of course, naturally in 1893, it's like, well, give us the fucking vote.
Yeah.
And then guys going, well,
probably.
Yeah, all right, probably be a smart move. I mean,
not the worst idea to give them the vote.
You are running that hotel and, you know, I'm not doing anything. So, yeah.
Just makes sense. And then that's kind of kept going forward.
I think it's more complicated than that. Of course it is. And, you know, then there was the wars, the Maori wars. And, you know, the Maori were fighters.
Yeah.
You know, so they fought back. They were the first time the British Army had encountered guerrilla warfare.
Right.
They would lure them into forest where they're standing in a line with muskets, meant fuck all. And then they'd drop out of trees and take them out.
Yeah, it was a more organized kind of warrior culture than like the Australian thing was like, because all different tribes. Like, was like, and they didn't really.
And
get
the Aboriginals weren't really. I suppose they probably did fight, but it wasn't, you know.
I don't think
the tribes in New Zealand were fighting amongst themselves at points, you know. Yeah. So, you know, being able to fight was a valued part of.
Well, that was the same in Australia, but I think just probably because Australia was that penal colony,
yeah,
and it was this like big military presence along with these convicts. like they would have just been like, well, we're doing whatever we need to do to keep them in check.
Yeah.
And if that means, you know, committing a genocide against the indigenous population, sure, whatever. Like we're just we're just getting these guys to build roads, bro. Like that's what this is. Like we'll take out whoever stops the road. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And I mean, yeah, it's like an oversimplification and probably a bit cold, but I think it was just that. Like Australia's like, where, like, there's no one here.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that
obviously. Most of it's empty, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Like,
you're a continent. I think people forget that Australia is a continent.
Yeah, well, the smallest continent, largest island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Love it. No, but
that
just
should be the tagline.
Smallest continent, largest island. But oh, yeah, I just think New Zealand, like, does seem to be, like, more progressive in pretty much every aspect.
They're about to do a referendum to legalize marijuana.
Yeah,
like what Canada's done,
and gay marriage was very early adopted. 13th
country in the world.
Yeah, just all this stuff.
Yeah, and first country in the world to have a transgender member of parliament in the 1990s.
There you go.
Yeah,
and a lot of female prime ministers as well.
Yeah,
it's just always
three female prime ministers.
Yeah, so it's funny that Waititi's come out and said about the racism, but I guess like maybe the racism is probably like the more complicated of the two, whereas like the gender equality. Like, I think racism is
hugely complicated. But you're right. In terms of gender equality and sort of acceptance of gay, transgender, all that, very progressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But every country's, no matter how glistening and amazing a country looks, there's going to be that. There's going to be some shit in the closet, isn't there?
Yeah. Have you noticed here, like, with. Like, you can kind of tell there's, like, a bit of a rise in, like, fascism and neo-Nazis and stuff because at the Tube, there's all those advertisements for the skull shaver. It's like, do you want to shave your skull without a single nick in 45 seconds? And I'm like, they're tapping into the skinhead market. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
I see in this racism a business opportunity.
Very New Zealand. Got to be business first.
Yeah. But I think over here, you know, certainly everyone's banged on about it, but Brexit really has... I've been here 18 years. I've never known it to be so sort of turbulent.
Yeah.
Fucking British politics was boring.
Right. And this has really kicked it up because this is the only one I know up close.
Yeah. Saturday Night Live is doing sketches on British politics now.
You've never seen that in your goddamn
life.
Never
happened before.
Never.
You know? It takes a lot for the Americans to notice.
Because their politics is so entertaining. Exactly. Like, why would you look outside? Yeah. You know, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, but now the Brits are fucking getting involved. And we all know, certainly with sitcoms, British do it better. So, you know, they're showing this.
Look, I'm not going to challenge that. I'm going to leave that as like your final comment.
Throw it out there.
For the listeners. All right, Jared Christmas, is there anything coming up that you want people to know about, who heard you here, who liked you?
Just come and see me live.
See you live? Any shows, any festivals coming up? Anything like that?
Well, I'm going to do Edinburgh next year, and I do a show with a beatboxer called Hobbit, and we do a kid show and we do an adult show, so we'll be popping up all over the place in different festivals doing that.
Great.
It's quite good fun. I'll be doing the circuit and doing the festival circuit, and then...
You got any
full run in Edinburgh?
Got any specials out there? Got any recorded stuff?
No, I've got these shitloads of YouTube videos.
Shitloads of YouTube?
Yeah.
All right.
Jared Christmas comedian, because otherwise you'll get Jarred Christmas gifts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my name's spelled J-A-R-R-E-D, and it's Jarred.
That is
or you'll get
cruel.
You'll get Americans Jared's Christmas show sort of thing, you know?
So Jared Christmas comedian.
Yeah, yeah. If you really want to watch stuff that I've done in the past on YouTube. There's a series on YouTube called Dwarves Assemble that I did with Warwick Davis. That's quite fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mate, this is
plenty of shit out there.
People like following up on things. I figured this out. People go to shows.
Yeah.
People
totally.
Turn up.
Come along.
And
come along.
If you go along, fucking mention the pod.
Yeah.
Let him know.
Say hi. I love saying hi to people.
All right. Jared Christmas.
Do we end by saying peace out?
If you'd like.
Do you not have a end thing?
No.
Like, Paul, what's his name? Pete Holmes has enjoy your burrito? Do you not have fucking get your laughing gear around that, mate? Or
is that you taking off my accent?
No. That's a character I do.
I mean, that's the funny thing. When you've been doing New Zealand voices in the pod so far, you have been invoking an Australian accent, which I find very confusing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if old J-Bone is as good as you
say. No, he probably isn't. The problem is I did a sitcom over here where I played an Australian. Do you know what I mean? And got into a bit of trouble in Australia.
Of course you fucking would.
Yeah.
How dare you, mate?
Funny.
Coming over here, taking our jobs.
Because I did an interview in TNT magazine over here.
Yeah.
Where the journalist said, so you're a New Zealander playing an Australian on a BBC sitcom. Mm. You know, what's going on there? And I just said, well, you know, there's a rivalry between Australia and New Zealand. And I guess a New Zealander playing an Australian on British TV is just my little dig at Australia. And that got picked up. And a couple of newspapers in Australia, and thankfully this was before Twitter, and all that shit.
I did get
through my website a couple of Australians being a bit sort of like
being a bit irate.
How fucking dare you, mate?
Well, I mean, we got the last laugh because Sam Neill was in Hunt for the Wilder People, so we come out on top.
What do you mean? He's Kiwi.
What?
Sam Neill's Kiwi.
No, he's not.
Yes, of course he is.
Get the fuck out.
What do you want about me?
No, he's not. He's in
don't
Jurassic
try and
Park.
Steal Sam
no,
Neill.
No, we have Sam Neill.
You don't have Sam Neill.
All right.
This is Farlap all over again. We've had this argument about Russell Crowe, but he turned out to be a bit of a prick, so we were like, Australia can have him.
We know that we got Russell Crowe. We know. He you likes rugby him. League. Of course we got him. Yeah. Like, but I thought Sam Neill was
Kiwi. He owns a winery in New Zealand. Yeah. Two paddocks.
Well, yeah, Australians owning things in New Zealand. Yeah, that's never happened before. Yeah, all right. That's it. That's the end. Now we're bickering. We were so unified this whole time.
Pavlova. Don't bring up Pavlova.
Putting the ante in Antipodes. Bye. That was my chat with Jared Christmas, the lovely man, the king of New Zealand. That's what I'm going to refer to him as from now on, because he does seem to be the absolute first New Zealand comic who really came over to the UK and made a bit of a living out of it. Definitely go try to find him live. He's everywhere. That should not be difficult. Just get around his website or on Twitter. First things first, I just want to admit my mistake. Sam Neill, I looked it up. He is 100% from New Zealand. I don't know why I thought he was Australian. I don't know if in Jurassic Park they say he's Australian. I just don't know. In my head, he was Australian, and I just want to apologize for doing that thing that Australian people do, where we assume anyone from New Zealand who is famous and successful is actually Australian. Other than that, it was a long episode, so I'll just keep this brief. If you want to come check out a show, I am at Backyard Comedy Club January 6th doing the next Australian Comedians Dope Comedy. It actually features Alice Fraser, who is one of my previous guests on this podcast, as well as Ro Campbell, who is from Edinburgh and who will be a guest very, very soon. And beyond that, my special / album launch party is January 8th at 2 North Down, which is in King's Cross. If you've pre-ordered or bought either the special or the album, you can get into that for free. I'm going to have some mates from the UK comedy scene doing something a little bit different there. Thanks so much. I'm sorry again that the episode was late, but that's what happens with Christmas. Things get slowed down. But hey, Jared Christmas, what a great guest. Thanks for listening. I'll have the next one out just after New Year's. Thanks so much. Bye.